You're listening to DraftKings Network.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Now's a good time to remember where the story of tequila started. In 1795, the first tequila distillery was opened by the Cuervo family. And 229 years later, Cuervo is still going strong. Family owned from the start, same family, same land. Now's a good time to enjoy Cuervo, the tequila that invented tequila. Go to Cuervo.com to shop tequila or visit a store near you. Cuervo, now's a good time.
Trademarks owned by Becle, SAB, the CV. Copyright 2024, Proximo. Jersey City, New Jersey. Please drink responsibly.
This is the Dan Le Batard Show with the Stugatz Podcast.
A big, giant sports book, Stugatz. We're still making those. It's physically a big book. It is a book about big, meaty subject matter. Seth Wickersham is a journalist who has done very good work in football and elsewhere, but really somehow, and I don't know how he did this, got in with this team that nobody gets in with from certain angles, even though he didn't have access to the key players, because it's not like Brady, Belichick want to give him anything, or Kraft for that matter.
No one has taken more deep dives into the Patriots organization than Seth. Nobody.
It's Better to Be Feared is the book, The New England Patriots and the World They Made, and they're a dynasty, and I always marveled. I thought somebody at some point was going to tell this story, Seth, because I'm like, how in our America's most popular sport can they do these things and we don't see the inner workings of the belly in the celebrity machine? So thank you for joining us, and start here. How'd you get in there? Tell me where the book, where the seeds of the book started.
Man, Dan, it was probably back when you and I were colleagues at ESPN Magazine. And in November of 2001, our old boss, Gary Honig, sent me to Foxborough to go write about this guy who had just replaced Drew Bledsoe temporarily, it seemed, as the starter, Tom Brady. And we both graduated from college the same year. We were both about the same age. And I remember that first meeting with him over at the old Foxborough Stadium. That thing was like a high school field. And he's wearing like gray sweatpants. He's got a backpack that has beer in it because he lost a bet on the Michigan State game and owed his teammates some payout. And we just started talking. And I think that even though Brady, Belichick, and Kraft didn't participate explicitly for the book, I felt like that because I had those moments, that was the first of many over the course of years that I could draw upon and kind of write about how these guys accomplished this greatness, how celebrity figured out into it, what the costs of it were. I felt like I could do that well, in addition to just sort of like, you know, the old stuff that we all do, just usual reporting that you try to do for stories.
What do you regard as the juicy stuff? Obviously, a book attempts, and you're a journalist, so you're trying to tell the whole story, and people are going to grab and aggregate, and I think the Patriots have denied everything, right? This big emotional game, Brady went out of his way afterward to say, nothing is true. Nothing is true. Nobody knows anything about us. So you're here to say what to that?
Well, Brady, there was an anecdote that came out, and you know, I think there's a lot of the juicy stuff, but I can go as little as long or as you want on any of these. But there was an anecdote that came out that on the last, when Tom Brady in March of 2020 was saying goodbye to the Patriots, he said goodbye to Robert Kraft in person, and then he and Bill Belichick talked over the phone. And he later told one of his best friends that night that he thought it was telling of where the state of their relationship was, that they ended up doing it over the phone. Now, it never really had anything to do with Bill. Bill denied that there was anything nefarious in charge of it, but Brady actually didn't deny that he said that. I think that he instead focused on the phone call, and it was a great phone call. I mean, Belichick called him the greatest player that the league had ever seen. But, you know, I've been through this a lot with the Patriots over the years. You know, sometimes you write stories that flatter them. Sometimes you write stories that anger them, and they come out and deny things, and then things end up coming out true as people tell their accounts years later.
What's your response to Belichick saying that this book sounds a lot like second, third, fourth hand comments from people?
Well, most of the interviews for the book were people on the record, and it's well detailed. I think I have 30 pages of footnotes at the back of the book. And so there are some people who are anonymous sources, but those are very few. Most people are on the record in the book, and that includes Brady, Belichick, and Kraft, you know, during various times when I met them with them over the years. If there's a journalism lesson in there, it's never throw away a notebook.
Let's make this easy for the audience, Seth. You said I can go as long or as little as you want on these, so let's do it. Top five juiciest things in Seth Wickersham's book. We're going to go from five to one, since you have, again, this is an exhaustive look. It's thoroughly reported. As he said, it's across two decades of the man's work, and he does very good work, and no one, right? This is correct to say, Seth, and I don't mean to flatter you here too much, but no one has written more thoroughly about this team and its inner workings than you have, correct?
Thanks, man. No, look, I think that there are some things that got out, some newsier things, and one of them is Robert Kraft in the fall of 2018. He's at a conference in Aspen, and, you know, he says, it's one of these kind of business conferences, rich guy conferences, and he says, you know, I really hate leaving conferences like this. You meet with some of the most brilliant minds, and I got to go to Detroit to be with the biggest f-ing asshole of my life, my head coach. And obviously that's a funny quote, but, you know, within the context of Robert Kraft, I think with Kraft, you know, he'll probably get into the Hall of Fame for this. And that's that, like, he did an amazing job of kind of managing these egos for so long. And that doesn't mean that it didn't come with, you know, occasional managerial challenges like that. But, you know, that was kind of a funny moment. There's a moment where Roger Goodell is starting to investigate Spygate, and he has to try to catch himself up to speed on 7 years of cheating in a matter of days. And he calls around to various head coaches and GMs, and they all just pile on Belichick. They just say, you know, it's like the height of their piousness. You got to punish this guy. He's a cheater or whatever. And he calls Mike Shanahan, who was the coach of the Broncos at the time. And Mike Shanahan, in a glimpse of rare honesty and mindset into how the best coaches think, expressed to Goodell that he was mad that he didn't think of the cheating methods himself. And if he had, he would have done it in a New York minute. And so I thought that that was really kind of a funny quote and revealing. Obviously, Spygate's like a big part of the book. There was a near fist fight between Eric Mangini and Bill Belichick over it that I talk about. But those are a couple of the things that got a little bit of attention last week.
Why does Bob Kraft think that Bill Belichick is an idiot who's the biggest asshole compared to the people, the rich people he was meeting with?
You've seen Bill Belichick, right? No, Bill's a tough guy to manage and to be around sometimes. I think that it's one of the things that's kind of made him so brilliant. And one of the things that I get into in the book is just what it's like to work for him. These days that started 4:30 in the morning and ended 11:30 at night. And these meetings that last forever, where he's checking for any loose screw with the various coaches. And, you know, there's no end in sight. And he takes his shoes off and he puts his stinky feet up on the table. And these things just go late at night. And I think that with Robert Kraft, obviously, there was times that he felt like that Belichick didn't give him the respect that he deserved. I think that during the early part of the run, Kraft felt that Belichick would kiss his ass a decent amount. And then once they started winning a lot of Super Bowls and it was clear that Belichick was going to be a Hall of Famer, that ended. And there was one moment I talk about where Kraft is calling Nick Caserio, who at the time was Belichick's top personnel executive, trying to find out information about the team because Belichick won't tell Kraft. And Nick Caserio tells Kraft, I don't know, because Belichick hadn't told him certain things either.
Seth, of the three, who has the biggest ego? Bill, Tom, Kraft?
Oh, man, that is a hard question. I think I would have to go with, I mean, it's just a tie, because their ego manifests itself in different ways. I think that Kraft wants to be loved a little bit more than Brady and Bill do. And I think with Brady and Bill, they have egos because they want to be known as the best at what they do and have those sort of outside goals to be the best. But they also are self-aware enough to know that to do that, they have to put in the work and the grind and think outside of the box in ways that people who just have huge egos and never really, you know, work that hard think about.
Seth, you said that Mangini and Belichick almost got in a fight. if they had gotten in that fight, who would win that fight?
And what did it look like? What was the fight about? And what did it look like before it had to be won?
All right. So Eric and Belichick, they used to be so close. I mean, they were as close as you could possibly get among football relationships. And Eric Mangini left the Patriots to go to the Jets. That was a problem in their relationship. It really started to deteriorate. And then Spygate happens with the Jets, and it was just destroyed. And so fast forward 6 months, they're at the league meetings, and there was a head coach dinner. And afterwards, everyone's kind of mingling around. And Julie Mangini, Eric's wife, bumps into Belichick. And Julie Mangini is a very friendly person, and she says hi and kind of tries to ease some of this tension that's come up. I mean, Bill Belichick spoke at her wedding. He read a poem at her wedding, and Bill kind of blows her off, and she was upset about it. So she goes to tell Eric. Eric finds out, and he just hits the roof, and he comes across the room, and he yells, "Hey, Bill, fuck you." And he's about to take a cut at him, but two coaches hold him back. And so I do think that if those coaches hadn't held him back, I think that Eric had the upper hand on that one.
I looked in the shipping container, and all eyebrows raised at one time at just one sentence in the middle of your story.
Roses are red, violets are blue. You're in love.
And f*** you.
Read a poem?
He read a poem. That was good, though. I was not anticipating that. Big props to you guys for having that one ready.
Roses are red.
That's some quick thinking.
Violets are fancy. Not asking any more of your goddamn questions. We're on to Cincinnati.
Did you just try to
fancy Cincinnati?
Fancy Cincinnati?
Is it Mangini's wife named Nancy? That would have been an easy one.
You came close, Mike.
It works.
It would make sense, though, that Bob Kraft would feel left out because the other two guys don't need any love. They get plenty. Everyone's already talking about them. Always is the best.
That is true.
So Bob Kraft plays what role in all of this? What are the most overt examples of, hey, I get credit for this? Why do you guys get all the credit for this?
I'll give you one. So obviously he's great at just keeping this thing together as long as it could and kind of managing these egos. And, you know, he had told Tom Brady that, you know, Brady would have some say. He had promised him that if Bill ever wanted to move in on from him, he would have some say on where he went. And, you know, things really got tough in New England after the Falcons Super Bowl. Brady and Bill had won their fifth. And I think that Tom started to venture into endeavors that was beyond just being the Patriots quarterback. He released his book, The TB12 Method. He did the Tom versus Time documentary. And then in the middle of it, you have Belichick deeply invested in Jimmy Garoppolo, his backup. Belichick curtailing the access of Alex Guerrero, Tom Brady's business partner, around the building because it was starting to cause tension within the team and the training staff. And so things got to be problematic there. And that offseason, I wrote a story about it, and the Patriots released a statement saying that they were united and there was no problems. And later on, you know, Brady ended up skipping that entire offseason program. And Kraft really worked hard to try to get Brady and Bill back on the same page. He held a meeting with the two of them. It didn't quite resolve itself. But finally, Brady kind of wanted out of his contract. He wasn't sure he wanted to return to New England. And Kraft initially said no. Then he later ended up going back the next day and saying that he would let him out if he wanted. But at that point, I think that Brady had decided he wanted to return to New England. And so things ended up working themselves out. But that's an example of Kraft and kind of how he's able to navigate these guys.
Seth, do you blame either of them for not believing a guy who says he wants to play quarterback and can play at this level until the age of 45? Because who would believe that? I mean, honestly.
You can't blame them, but man, I mean, and that was kind of the through line beginning with that 2017 offseason, is that Brady wanted a contract that would take him till he was 45. I mean, he stated that as his goal. And even though Belichick kind of took the heat for this departure, this divorce, it was really an organizational decision. Like, you know, down in Miami when the Super Bowl against the Chiefs and the Niners was down there, Kraft told some other owners, look, we want Brady, but maybe not until he's 45 years old. And when you look back on it, even though Brady was pushing the limits of what was possible, you think, you know, the two guys who should have known better than anybody else in this world than underestimate Tom Brady ended up doing just that.
Can you take us through how that happens, though, Tom? Because the Crafts took the what I thought was the fairly extraordinary gesture of putting their name on Tom Brady will have the ending here that he wants. I didn't think that they would put their name on that unless that's what was going to be so. What happened in between there?
Well, one could say they probably did do that in the sense that so August of 2019, the Brady and Belichick won their sixth Super Bowl. They're in a contract negotiation into training camp, and Brady still is not getting a contract that's guaranteed to take him through age 45. And at one point, he considers leaving training camp in protest. He was so frustrated at how things were going. And the negotiation ended with him getting a raise and essentially a one-year deal, and the Crafts granted him a chance to be an unrestricted free agent at the end of the year. And so I think that was their example of kind of letting him have some say over his departure. He signs that deal, and then 48 hours later, he and Gisele Bündchen put their house in Brookline on the market. And as he's later said publicly, he knew that that was his last year in New England right then.
That's leadership, uncomfortable though it may be and wrongheaded though it may be, because the way that they got Tom Brady returning to fanfare, and they didn't get what Aaron Rodgers had this offseason and what Ben Roethlisberger is in the middle of now, is because the organization leaned on the dude, did the foolhardy thing, but that is how you end it, Seth. Like you just described, nobody gets the ending Brady got, and the Patriot way at the end is the organization caving in on his neck and disrespecting him at every turn, and everyone applauding and us all seeing, oh, wait, they undervalued him. The geniuses got it wrong. The guy most responsible for doing what he did there just did it somewhere else, took it all with him because you guys thought he couldn't play until he was 45.
And Seth is saying those two guys should have known. If any two guys should have known he could play until he's 45, it should have been them.
Seth, how does Tom Brady, man, he comes from such authority and such respect. How does he not hit these people with more bleep you other than just beating them?
Well, that's kind of always been the way that he's done it, right? You know, you've seen some things come out from his camp. You know, his dad's made some mild but noteworthy kind of tweaks on Belichick, and Alex Guerrero came out and said things. But I think that Brady, you know, as angry as he's gotten over the years, and you know how frustrated he was that they kind of opened the door for him in New England to walk out and he walked out with them, he ended up winning in the end. I mean, can you imagine what it was like for Robert Kraft last week to watch Tom Brady on your field in that jersey, wondering like, how did we let this happen?
I wish Brady had held out. Who did he serve by not holding out? How great. He could have made the same mess that Aaron Rodgers did, Stugatz, just by, he walks out for a practice.
Yes.
And I think, Seth, you correct me if I'm wrong, he walks out for a practice on that organization and they have to figure out a way to cave, and they can't be as cold as they are with all these other guys that they always trade a year before they're actually done.
Yeah, but I also think that Brady is, he has enough self-awareness to know that, like, look, if they don't want me, fine, peace out. And I think that's kind of how he was, where he's like, okay, I'm going to do this contract, then I'm going to go somewhere else. And I think that when he went somewhere else, he wanted to go to a place that valued him as an astute football mind in ways that he felt like he couldn't quite accomplish in New England. Like at the Super Bowl that was down in Miami, he was talking to Joe Montana and he says, you know, they ask for my advice, I give it, and then they ignore me. And when he was having his first conversation with Bruce Arians about joining the Bucs, Bruce Arians told him, hey, you know, look, I always give my quarterbacks a lot of leniency over what we do. And plus, you're Tom Brady. Imagine like how that must have felt to hear those words for the first time in God knows how long. You're Tom Brady. And you look at him in Tampa, he's essentially an executive in addition to just being the quarterback and the offensive coordinator. Alex Guerrero, as we mentioned, he was banned from part of the Patriots building by Bill Belichick. He has an office in Tampa and he got a Super Bowl ring.
But Seth, you say imagine the feeling for Bob Kraft watching Tom Brady go on that field, his field, and beating the Patriots and Bill Belichick. Forget about that. Imagine being Bob Kraft and seeing Tom Brady in a Bucs uniform lifting the Vince Lombardi trophy. Like, they look like fools here, both of them.
Yeah, after your head coach had told him that he was close to the end.
Right.
Guerrero's got an office at the Bucks facility? Guerrero, what happened?
How much have a statue?
How much of the breakup is right there that they weren't supporting his voodoos and his medicines that may or may not have been human growth hormone that allowed him to age in a way that was more defiant than by 6 years than any quarterback before him?
You know, only Brady can answer that, but I'm sure it didn't help. I mean, they really, you know, when he banned Alex Guerrero from the building, it was front page news in Boston. And, you know, it was not only, you know, Belichick asserting his authority, but it was also a reminder that whatever Tom Brady, this business that he was building, had nothing to do with the Patriots. And Belichick would go out of his way to make resoundingly clear that Alex Guerrero was not an employee of the Patriots. Instead, he was an outside consultant.
Seth, how hurt is Tom? Seriously. Now, you're saying, like, the things you're talking about don't seem human to just be like, oh, you didn't want me? Okay, I'll just go along my way because I'm so confident I can do this anywhere else, even though I'm 44 years old. I'm smarter and better. I'll defy the aging process. Ha ha. You watch. I'm going to win the championship, become the only guy ever in the home city to win a championship. I'll show you. It's all absurd. Every bit of what you're talking about here is absurd. You'd have to be a robot not to be hurt by Kraft. If you're a father figure guy and these guys helped raise you in the business, for them to tell you, no, you're done when you don't think you are? Like, how could he not be hurt by that?
I'm sure that he was. I mean, one thing with Tom, though, is that, like, he's very careful about what he says. And often the people close to him end up doing all of his talking for him. But, yeah, I mean, I think that Tom tries to say, well, you know, it was extreme circumstance. Nobody had played at this level till I was age 45. But like I said, these guys should have known what he was capable of.
Seth, in the end, it seems like Tom Brady just wanted to be treated like an adult.
No, I'll tell you what it is he wants the Britney Spears consortium to be disbanded is what he wants. Like, he's in a cult and you're saying he wants to be an adult. Just listen to me. I'm pretty powerful and valuable. Will you quit treating me like I'm 14 years old?
Yeah. And Alex Guerrero came out and he said that. He was like, you know, a couple of weeks ago, he told the Boston Herald that, you know, Bill didn't evolve enough to account for what Tom Brady had become. And while I'm not sure that's totally fair to Bill, I mean, everybody knows that Tom Brady was not just another Patriot. Look, he wanted something different. After they had made their decision and they had made their evaluation, he wanted something different. And he kind of went from, like, you know, Harvard Law to Florida State.
Conservatorship is what I meant to say there, not consortium.
I didn't notice.
I love the dig at FSU, though.
Is that not what we're looking at here? Why is it? You've seen this with Aaron Rodgers, Seth. Why can't you just give Tom Brady an alliance? Why can't you just give him some power?
Ego.
But he's Tom Brady.
I know, and he's Bill Belichick.
And that's what Bruce Arians was saying, and that's why I found this entire thing, this standoff with the Packers and Aaron Rodgers, just so ridiculous. Like, look, I understand if you can't take your second-year quarterback and let him in on personnel decisions, but if you're the Packers, or even if you're the Patriots, at the end with Brady, all you're going to be judged on, your entire legacy, is how many championships did you win when you had an all-time player. You have to make different rules for those guys. And even with Aaron Rodgers, I mean, people are like, oh, you know, what if he picks this receiver and this receiver's horrible? Well, so what? The best GMs are wrong at least 50% of the time on every player, and that's their only job. And so, like, I do think that when you have someone like Brady and Aaron Rodgers and they're asking for a little bit more input on things that affect their careers and their performance and their jobs, I think it's really numbskull to not do that. I think it's just kind of, it doesn't make a lot of sense to me.
But Kraft has to be questioning Belichick at this point. They left a Super Bowl on the table already.
Well, I think that Belichick has earned the right to be able to walk away whenever he wants, but look at the reaction. Look at the, you know, this offseason. I mean, they spent more money in guaranteed contracts for players than Robert Kraft initially spent for the entire Patriots franchise. Mm. I don't know when Bill Belichick's going to walk away, but it's clear that they are trying to compete now in a way that it would be, I don't know this for a fact, but it would be a little naive to think that it's not in reaction to what Tom Brady just showed that he's capable of without them.
What is the advice they were ignoring from him? Because, Seth, they did betray him at the end. He needed better skill guys.
Well, remember, he had Antonio Brown for a little bit, and then Antonio Brown got into his problems, and Robert Kraft made a decision that he couldn't be a Patriot anymore. And I think that Belichick and Brady wanted Antonio Brown to stay on the roster. All that said, you know, I think it had to do with schematics. And if you look at, like, what happened last year, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers were running a version of Bruce Arians offense with Tom Brady for most of the year. And it even though they were winning games, they weren't a dominant team. And it was really the last month of the season where they really let Tom run the offense as he wanted to run it. And that's when they really took off. And if you look, Bill Belichick was right last week when he said he made an observation that the offense that Brady's running in Tampa is the same offense he's run his entire career.
Are you willing to say who's most wrong here in the breakup?
Well, I think it has to be Belichick, because I think that Kraft would have done anything to have Brady retire as a Patriot and stay on.
And what is the nature of that conflict? What can you tell us? Because that's hard to report right there. The feelings between Kraft and Belichick up there, where Kraft is leaving a meeting of rich people saying, I got to go deal with the asshole.
Well, I think that Kraft had to have been wondering, like, God, we think this guy doesn't have much left, and then he goes and wins the Super Bowl. You know, what the F? But all that said, I think that one thing with Bill Belichick, I know that he's been under fire the past couple of years for his drafts or whatever. And no, this is someone who has a lot of pride in what he does. And he has always wanted to walk away from the Patriots with them set up well and fixed up well at quarterback. And one of the hardest things, I mean, the hardest thing to do in pro football, if not pro sports, is to pick a Super Bowl caliber quarterback. And obviously he won the lottery with Tom Brady. He developed the hell out of him, but he won the lottery. He developed a Super Bowl caliber replacement in Jimmy Garoppolo and had to ship him. And then, you know, he drafts Mac Jones. And I think that whenever Bill walks away, he wants the team set up long-term at quarterback. And it looks like, you know, through at least a month, that he's got a good player there to try to develop, and we'll just see what happens the rest of the year.
Last question, we've got to get out of here. Do you know what happened with Garoppolo? What are the best reported details?
Well, look, Belichick was deeply invested in Jimmy Garoppolo, and Tom wouldn't let him have the field. I mean, Tom was just playing well. Bill turned down offers in the offseason, and then finally, as the trading deadline is nearing, he knows that Robert Kraft is loyal to Tom Brady and has said publicly and privately that Brady can walk away on his terms. Bill was running out of options. And so he calls Kyle Shanahan out in San Francisco. Kyle Shanahan thought he was calling because Shanahan's team had gotten killed the previous day, and he thought he was offering a pick-me-up, but instead he was offering Garoppolo straight up for a second-round pick.
It's a pick-me-up, though.
Yes, that is a pick-me-up. Thank you, Seth. Appreciate the time. Appreciate the book. The name of it is It's Better to Be Feared, The New England Patriots and the World They Made. If you want to see how football was dominated for the last two decades, the dynasty, you will not get a clearer glimpse than this one. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Whether you hydrate to live or live to hydrate, Liquid IV quenches your thirst faster than water alone. With three times the electrolytes of the lead in sports drink, plus eight vitamins and nutrients for everyday wellness, all in a single sugar-free stick. Are you heading to the airport on a long flight? Or do you need something after your flag football game? Well, if I was you, I would definitely go with Liquid IV just for the electrolytes so you don't feel run down. And I know for me, Liquid IV helps me start my day in the morning, and it helps give me the energy to do stuff like cut my yard and wash my car and work out and just face the day. And you can get your energy back while drinking something that's delicious. And when I say delicious, you can pick from flavors like pear, white peach, green grape, lemon lime, and more. Liquid IV is non-GMO, free from gluten, dairy, and soy. However you hydrate, grab your Liquid IV Hydration Multiplier sugar-free in bulk nationwide at Costco, or get 20% off your first order when you go to liquidiv.com and use code DAN at checkout. That's 20% off your first order when you shop Better Hydration using code DAN today at liquidiv.com.
Hey everybody, it's Mike, and typically I record these Miller Lite spots in the studio, but I requested that I specifically record this one from my home office because I got a window, and I'm looking outside at those beautiful fishtail palms, knowing that in just a few seconds, I'm going to go out there, I'm going to crack open a can of Miller Lite, because while sitting outside by my fishtail palms is usually a good time, I like to take it up a notch and make it a Miller time. That's right, you crack that puppy open, and you don't have to think about what you're drinking for a darn second. A lot has changed over the years, including my backyard. Lots of landscaping being done right now. But the one thing that hasn't changed is the undebatable quality of Miller Lite. You don't have to choose what quality is the best. Miller Lite has great taste, and it's less filling. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Dan, or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces, fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer.
Don Lebatard.
Ravens good double up the Colts, and they are good against every team except the Steelers. I mean,
so that's a 14-point win there for the Ravens.
Yeah, yeah. Double up, two touchdowns.
Stugatz!
I think double up is a score. Like, if the Colts have 10 and you double them up, you score 20. Well, I don't think okay. double
that's
up.
That's how you do it. I do it differently.
Okay, but yeah. I don't think that double them up. Like, you explained it to me as
you
if I was supposed
way,
to.
Have my way.
I understand, I mean, but that's not technically doubling up. Like, I think you used the phrase wrong or something happened.
Double up plus four.
Yes.
Exactly.
Okay, that's what he meant, of course.
Mm-hmm. Two touchdowns.
You never cease to amaze me.
He's amazing. He really is. He's breathtaking in his stupidity.
This is the Don Lebatard Show with the Stugatz.
Roy just handed me a story I had not seen, Stugatz. NBC News' Tom Winter is reporting that 18 former NBA players have been arrested and charged federally for defrauding the NBA's health and welfare benefit plan out of approximately $4 million. The players include, and these are some names you're going to know, Stugatz, Sebastian Telfair, Darius Miles, Ruben Patterson, Glenn Big Baby Davis, Jamario Moon, Tony Allen. There are a number of other names that you're going to recognize here as more fringe players.
The Grindfather.
Thank you, Stugatz.
You're welcome.
And we mentioned when Clinton Portis got hit on this recently or something similar, because these things come with jail terms. And this is the second Sebastian Telfair story that I've seen in the last couple of days, because the other one that he had going on is his wife and his mistress and his girlfriend were testifying, and his sister was allegedly caught plotting to kill his wife. And Sebastian Telfair is going to go to jail now here for a while because there was a weapons charge, and this was one of the most promising basketball players out of New York ever, correct?
Telfair was, there was Kenny Anderson, Stephon Marbury, I think maybe they all went to the same high school, or Bishop Malloy and Sebastian Telfair. He was one of, yes, he was one of the greatest prospects to ever come out of New York City in terms of
people
basketball.
Thought he was going to be the best point guard ever, or one of the best point guards ever. And now this story takes a turn that is painful. And one of the things, Stugatz, that makes an appearance all the time in sports, because some of these guys get to their dreams and then you just don't have the toolbox or the toolbox to manage your finances, or people prey on you because now you're somebody who has a great deal of money. And then what do you do when your career ends and the pension's not enough? What do you do? Because Telfair had a nice career. He played in the league for plenty of time. He made a decent amount of money. He didn't live up to his expectations.
No, but he played for a while.
But I think that when you need to make great deals of money because you don't have as much and you've gotten used to a certain lifestyle, this is where some of this stuff makes an appearance with scams. How do I make big money quickly? Was it Travis Henry, a Bills running back who had a whole lot of kids, and next thing you know, he had a whole lot of child support payments, and next thing you know, he's being caught with a whole lot of drugs in the car, and I think he's probably still in jail on a major drug offense. Because what do you do, Stugatz? If you've worked all your life to get to the pros, you get to wealth. Very often you're getting to wealth from poverty, and it's worse, Stugatz, to have tasted it and lost it than it is to have never had wealth at all.
Right. Just to give people an idea of Sebastian Telfair and what people thought of him, he was the number two prospect coming out of high school. He committed to Rick Pitino at Louisville, I believe. And then later said, nah, screw it. I'm going straight to the pros. Now, he played 11 years, and he made a lot of money. And to answer your question, I think it's easy for everyone to say, hey, what do you do in that spot? You've tasted it. You've made money. You don't have money. You're desperate. Your career's over. Your life has been kind of defined by the time you're 35, right? You lose your identity and all that stuff. And most people would say, hey, if you didn't save your money correctly, go to work. And I think that's easy to say from where we're sitting, but not so easy if you're actually in the middle of it, you know? So I don't know the answer to that question. It's certainly not breaking the law. That's not what you do, but these are really desperate, you know, this is a desperate guy who needed money and did something that appears to be very desperate.
I'm sure a lot of people are getting nervous. Once that Clinton Portis story broke, you could see how this is something that could have been abused over years. There are probably guys right now wondering how far back this investigation will go.
Of course.
Clinton Portis, that one made me sad because he made such a ton of money at the disposable position. He was a part of a superstar trade in a different league. Champ Bailey for Clinton Portis. This is going to change the fortunes of both teams.
For those that aren't familiar with the story and the scam, and I don't know, obviously this is similar to what's going on in the NBA. I don't know all the details of the NBA, but the details surrounding the Clinton Portis
thing. It's a federal charge arrested for defrauding the NBA's health and welfare benefit plan out of approximately $4 million.
Yeah, it says here that Williams, who is Terrence Williams, who was taken in the NBA draft by the Nets in 2009, allegedly orchestrated the years-long scheme and recruited other NBA health plan participants to assist by offering them fake invoices to support their allegedly false health plan claims. He's accused of receiving kickback payments totaling at least $23,000 in return for providing the alleged false documentation.
So it's very similar to the allegations toward Clinton Portis, who some of the allegations were they would put in for like hyperbaric chambers and recovery machines that they never actually bought, and they would just keep the cash for fake invoices.
Bummed me out because these people are going to jail, Stugatz. These people who responsible for times in our lives where they made a great deal of money, had a great deal of fame. Clinton Portis was fun, Stugatz. He would do press conferences wearing wigs. He'd let people into his life. I think he had a strip club in his house. I think that was one of his featured single things, living the life of the Washington superstar. And then to go from that to whatever it is that's happening that makes you turn to fraud so that you can make millions of dollars quickly, and now the turn is you lose your freedom. It's heartbreaking. I don't have a funny thing to say here. Like, I can wag my finger at these guys. How can you go broke? How can you be so dumb? How could you be an athletic cliche?
I think most people would do that. That's what they would say. Hey, how could you blow that opportunity, blow that money, and then on top of
Understood.
That, do this?
Understood. You know? And I wouldn't blame you at all if that's where you arrive, as people are struggling. And you hear me and you're like, what are you apologizing for these guys for? These are criminals. These are crimes. These are allegations. You don't do all of that. Yes. Yes, on all counts. You're right on everything. But also it breaks my heart for Clinton Portis to have lived that particular life and now is going to lose his freedom. Sebastian Telfair, it can be both, can it not? I can castigate the behavior and be like, oh, don't do that. What terrible judgment. How could you be so dumb? Or just sort of have your heart broken because this is where they arrived. Many people, I imagine, listening to this are saying, well, give me all that money. I wouldn't throw it away that way. Strip club in my house. Get the hell out of here.
And I understand that. I think what makes you sad about this is you have these guys, in particular Sebastian Telfair, that had literally the whole, like, the world was his oyster. He had everything, Dan. He was going to be an NBA all-star. He was going to be an NBA star. He was a prodigy, and he blew it all, right? He never turned into that, and then he resorted to this because that never worked out the way he wanted it to.
We've probably covered this, but why is the world someone's oyster? I'm imagining that I've asked that question before, but when you say the world was his oyster, do you...
I have no idea. I'm on it, though. I'll check
it. But do you know what you're saying? You know what you're saying when the world was his oyster? Is because oysters have pearls in them?
I believe, yes, that, you know, he had pearls in his future. The world is his oyster. Yes, he had wealth.
Jessica is shaking her head vigorously while shoveling bananas and oatmeal into her face. Okay, why is the world the oyster? You have a theory, Jessica?
I think it's because, like, it's an expression. It's like you're in the position where anything can be yours. Like an oyster is in the ocean and everything can pass through it. And I don't know.
Okay, you don't
know
either.
Not the pearl thing.
Well, okay. No, it's a pearl thing. The internet says.
I don't believe it.
Yeah, because oysters have pearls in them sometimes and you can open it up and it's tied to wealth.
Okay.
Sugats.
Don't ever ask me a question while I'm eating breakfast ever again.
I'm trying to, like, you were mad at us. I don't even have my headphones on.
I can't hear you right now. I'm trying to swallow my breakfast.
We do a show where I work off of facial cues. You're yelling at me for going to you because you were disagreeing with Stugatz.
I'm hungry. Don't give me a lunch break on this show.
Hey, everybody, it's Mike, and typically I record these Miller Lite spots in the studio, but I requested that I specifically record this one from my home office because I got a window, and I'm looking outside at those beautiful fishtail palms, knowing that in just a few seconds, I'm going to go out there. I'm going to crack open a can of Miller Lite because while sitting outside by my fishtail palms is usually a good time, I like to take it up a notch and make it a Miller time. That's right, you crack that puppy open, and you don't have to think about what you're drinking for a darn second. A lot has changed over the years, including my backyard. Lots of landscaping being done right now. But the one thing that hasn't changed is the undebatable quality of Miller Lite. You don't have to choose what quality is the best. Miller Lite has great taste, and it's less filling. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Dan, or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces, fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer.